everyone. Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. Your team every day. NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Corrales will be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get local expert analysis on each pick. Follow Locked On NBA on YouTube today and watch our live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern. So this is Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. Real quick programming note. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Jamichael Green decision because he went ahead and made his decision a little bit early before the weekend. We'll talk about that. And then the rest of the show is the live show from Friday, which I did not get up, but I have a good excuse this time. My puppy was not feeling good. So I had problems with my puppy. And you all like puppies, right? None of you hate puppies because who can hate a puppy or a kitty? Well, I could hate a kitty, but don't tell my wife that. So anyway, this is the live show. It talks on a number of topics. It's a good show. That's going to be the Monday show. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday all will be draft stuff. Adam and I will cover. I do have some more insight into what's kind of like what the Nuggets are looking at, as well as who's going to be around and who's probably not going to be. We'll talk about all those things and more on Tuesday's show. Wednesday will be on Tegna, which is on Never News 9 News Denver. You can see the live video version of the video version of that on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, Adam, as you may know, has got stuff going on DMVR, which you're going to want to check out. But I will have a wrap-up show after whatever the Nuggets do with the 26th pick on Thursday. We'll talk about that on Thursday night. And then Adam and I will reconvene on Friday to get both of our combined thoughts on where Denver sits going into free agency and after the draft. Let's talk real quick about Jamichael Green. So Jamichael Green go ahead and declined his player option for 2021-22. He will be an unrestricted free agent on on August 2nd is when he will be a free agent. So there's a lot of talk about there being interest in both sides to keep Jamichael Green in Denver, both from local guys, Mike Singer, national guys, the works. There's like a mutual interest between Will Barton in Denver and Jamichael Green in Denver. What I would tell you is that these situations are extremely fluid and the money is significant. Like if you're a megastar, then making $30 million versus $35 million, unless it's a point of pride, doesn't actually change that much for you. More than likely, you have other means of income and you're pulling in even more than that. And you're able to afford businesses, which means you're generating more income. So, but if you're a guy like Jamichael Green and the difference is between the mid-level exception or what he's currently on, which is a $7.5 million deal, and the full mid-level exception for a team in the upcoming 21-22 season, that's $9 million. That's a lot of money. Like that's a lot. That's like 25% of your income, 20% of your income. That's a 20% increase, right? Of your income. That's a lot. And especially just when you put it in terms that we can all kind of understand, because $1.5 million is nothing to LeBron James or even Nikola Jokic or Jamal Murray. That's really just nothing. It's just not that much money to them. $1.5 million is a lot to Jamichael Green. And so there's just a whole lot of ways that he doesn't wind up back in Denver. I'm not telling you it's going to happen. The front office, from what I understand, is still very confident that that will occur. The front office, I will tell you, after the Jeremy Grant deal, does tend to talk about things a little bit differently because they felt very strongly that there was a understanding, not an agreement, nothing locked in place, nothing. I will stop short of saying a handshake deal, but there was a lot of confidence that Jeremy Grant was going to return, especially given that they offered the same amount of money, but Jeremy Grant decided to leave, right? There's also a certain amount of money where at some point the Nuggets will say no. If Jamichael gets like a big offer, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if the Nuggets value Jamichael Green at $12 million or $15 million or $10 million. Like, I don't know what that number is, but most of the time teams have a number where they're like, that's it. That's one of the reasons, honestly, why so many of the front offices employ and actually refer to analytics. If you want to know what the actual help is, because trying to put that stuff in front of coaches and players oftentimes go badly. But if you're trying to figure out how much a guy's actually worth in a market sense, that's where oftentimes the analytics gives you a cold answer, which is helpful because you're trying to evaluate things based off of character and, you know, their family. Like, it's hard to be like, no, this guy is not worth Y, but is worth Z to us, when you know his mom and you know his kids and like all those types of things. All of this is to say that I am not willing to say right now whether I think Jamichael Green will be back in Denver, nor Will Barton. I think it depends on the market. And I think that we have too many unstable elements to know what that market's going to be. The reason I say that is there's just a lot of trade chatter. It's always active, but it's a little crazy right now, just in terms of the number of things that are being bounced around. So that doesn't mean that there's like serious offers being bandied about. It just means that I don't hear a lot of like, yeah, nothing really going on. It's like, no, there's a lot of stuff. Like, everyone's talking. Nobody's found the deal that they want yet, right? But everybody's talking. And one of the consequences of that is if certain things shift and rosters change, and all of a sudden the team finds themselves being like, you don't really need, we need like a stretch four that can defend. Hey, what about Jamichael Green? That's how that goes. Like, oh, what, Denver's only going to offer him this? Oh, we can offer him a little bit more. Call his agent and offer him, you know, whatever. And that's how you lose him. That's how it goes. But Green may just simply be like, yeah, I want a new deal. Okay, you offer me a deal. All right, I want to stay here. Cool. The team wants him back. The team likes him. The coach likes him. The star player likes him, which is what's most important. So is it likely that Jamichael Green returns to Denver? Based off of the signals, yes. I just can't tell you what the offers are going to be, what the market's going to look like, and how that's going to impact those decisions. We're just going to have to wait and see. But for right now, we know that come August 2nd, neither Will Barton nor Jamichael Green will be on roster with the Denver Nuggets. And those are decisions that are going to have to be managed by the front office on top of everything else. So we'll talk more about the fallout from that in the coming days. And one way or another, this thing will probably get settled in about 7 days. So we'll have this stuff figured out in short order. It won't be that long that you'll have to wonder about Jamichael Green or Will Barton. This stuff will get figured out probably, I would say, a week and a half. Free agency opens August 2nd, probably by August 6th, most everything's settled. So that's where we're at. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed the live show. Really appreciate it. It was a great show. Have fun talking. Enjoy the live show from Friday. Thanks, guys. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, which wants you to celebrate the freedom of choice that they offer with so many great flavors like coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. My favorite, strawberry. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mix box where you get two of each of the 9 flavors. Check out the macros. They all have got 17 to 18 grams of protein, which is great. The calories are ranging from only 130 to only 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Go to built.com and use promo code locked on and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code locked on for 15% off at builtbar.com. Friday live show on Spotify Green Room. So we're not actually like, our deal with Spotify Green Room ends this week, and so this is like allegedly the last one. I like doing these. I feel like these are good content. I feel like I like getting people involved and folks up on stage.
Me too. The only thing I don't like is the audio quality of these. Like, editing these can be a pain in the ass.
Well, that's why you do what I do. You don't edit at all, Adam. You know, if you don't care about the audio quality. My favorite this week was Frank Madden recorded Locked On Bucks from the streets of Milwaukee on his AirPods.
Oh, wow.
Like during the post game celebration of game 6. And he was like, you know what? If you have a problem with the audio quality, like, you could just, like, you can go screw yourselves. Like, he was so happy after the title. I want to ask you this. If the Nuggets made the finals, because like there's nowhere really to do it at Pepsi. There's no like you can't do a Deer District at Pepsi. Am I wrong on that? Like it doesn't feel like there's there's that courtyard. There's that courtyard on the I guess west side of the building, right?
Yeah, they couldn't do it there.
You can't really do it. So like. They just wouldn't have it. They just like they just wouldn't be.
That's not the truth. No, they are you talking about during the game or for like the parade or like party afterwards or whatever?
Oh, ball. Thank you for correcting me on the correct sponsorship of the arena. It is in fact Ball Arena. No, I'm talking about for the games. I'm talking about like during the games. Cuz like the parade seems pretty obvious, right? It's just like it's the arena, probably to the Capitol, right?
Yeah, that's usually. I think that's like where they usually do those types of things. I would say they did this a couple years ago. Was it? Yeah, I think it was actually the 2018 playoffs, so the first playoffs for the Nuggets, maybe 2019, and they did it outside. They got a big screen, and it was just to the north, like in the north entrance. And it was pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't that many people, you know. It was like a decent turnout, maybe 200 people or something like that. But again, it was the first round or second round. But they did do it, and I do think there's room out there to at least. It won't be like Milwaukee. There's not enough room to fill it up like Milwaukee did. But you could get probably as much people as you're going to get for the Nuggets anyway. Maybe it's good that it's a smaller venue.
You think so?
Well, yeah, if you had a big open space like that, I don't know if you'd get 2,000. How many people did they say was outside of it? 60,000 or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't think you're getting 60,000 people outside the arena for the Nuggets game.
Which is like an interesting question, right? Of like, can you get Colorado to be like that? Can you get Denver to be like that?
Well, you know what's interesting? So I asked George Karl this. George Karl coached in Seattle, Denver. Or he coached playoff series in Seattle, Denver, Milwaukee. And I asked him which one had the best, you know, atmosphere or whatever. And he said Milwaukee easily. So I was kind of surprised by that. I would have guessed. I don't know why I was surprised. But he said them during the playoffs, that city was the most, like, sort of caught by the buzz. I think Denver, you know, we talked about this. Denver, like most cities, is fair weather sports fans. And the deeper you go into the playoffs, the more likely it is that you're going to win or compete for a championship, the more people will show up. So I think it would surprise you. I think it would surprise some people if they made it to, say, a Western Conference Finals that was not in a bubble. I think you would see a lot of people showing up and showing out, but it would not be like Milwaukee.
Okay. You think it would surprise me?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, like, because even 2 years ago, the last time we had playoffs and, like, we could grade crowd capacity or whatever, you know, people did, there was all those Avs and Nuggets games going back to back to back, and like as it went on, people started dropping off. So I think the last taste we have of this is sort of like Denver got fatigued. I think that was special circumstances. I mean, it literally was like 30 straight days at Ball Arena or Pepsi Center at the time. But nonetheless, you get to the conference finals, you get to the NBA finals, it's just different. Everybody, this is how I was with Rocktober. I don't really care about baseball that much, but when the Rockies were making that run, I was diehard Rockies fan.
Omar very correctly says they need a place for people to drink outside. That's absolutely accurate. You gotta give the people a place to imbibe. Let's get Omar up. Omar, happy Friday, my man. What you got?
Oh, got two quick questions and one more philosophical question. The quick questions are, who do you see trading their picks before the draft? Do you think Bud outcoached Monty Williams? And the more philosophical question is, I don't really know how to put this politely, but what's like the difference between, you know, like clarifying and just being an asshole? Because like with Giannis before, you had people, you know, wondering, you know, is a back-to-back MVP actually good at basketball?
Right.
Who could really say? And it's just like, well, yeah, of course he's good. I mean, he's 25 and won back-to-back MVPs. I mean, I don't even think LeBron won back-to-back MVPs at 25, right? Like, I mean, it's just obvious. Yes, he's good. But at the same time, I kind of look at the Suns, and not to say that they're a bad team, but part of me just wonders, it's like, okay, so the first fully healthy team they played beat them four times in a row. The first team where what they were doing wouldn't work or wouldn't work easily, they lost four straight. So, I guess like I kind of wonder, what does that say about the Suns? And I guess like how beatable are they next year? I mean, obviously, if the Nuggets don't have Jamal, they're going to get crushed, which seems to make sense. But I don't know. Does that say anything about the Suns to you? And also, what do you think Bridges' contract is? I mean, I assume Ayton gets the max, but Miles Bridges or Mikal Bridges is also up for an extension. Is that roster going to get really expensive like the Nuggets roster?
You have many questions. What were your first questions?
Three questions. Budenholzer. Did Budenholzer get out-coached by Mike Williams?
And then the first one, trades their picks.
And trades their picks. Okay. We'll do that one last. We'll go in reverse order, Adam. So let's go. Bridges, I think he's going to get a big contract, and that's going to kind of limit them. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Sarver is cheap, but Sarver's cheap on the margins, like, you know, some other owners theoretically. And so, like, I don't think that there's a pretty good chance that he retains, especially, like, I don't know that it's a, no one knows from that I've talked to if Chris is, like, guaranteed to come back. Like, no.
That's what,
like,
I was going to say. I don't know if it's Sarver's decision. Like, is part of what I wonder is if Chris Paul, it's not even about the money of the team or whatever. He might have his mind made up. I don't know.
Yeah. And so if Chris leaves, then the money is there and they'll probably just extend and they can, you know, if they need to deal him later, they can deal him later for an upgrade or whatever. I would say that probably Bridges is looking at, I'll ballpark this at like 18 ish. Sounds about right. It wouldn't shock me if he got Gary Harris money, like 20 ish.
Yeah.
For adjusted for the increase, that wouldn't shock me.
Do you feel more confident about his future than you did about Gary Harris's into the summer after 2018?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I feel about the same. I thought they were both going to be great because Gary was coming off such a great season and was looking like, you know, such a big part of the team. That deal looked like real value at the time and just declined. Yeah. Because of Gary's health. So, I mean, you know, there's no reason to think Mikhail's going to suffer injuries. There's no reason to think that Gary was going to suffer injuries. He was pretty reliable. So, that's that. I'll say on Budenholzer, yeah, I think he did. I think Monty, you mentioned like the, how about this with the philosophical question? Monty, look, this is how it usually happens, okay? A playoff series is usually one team has the edge, the other team adjusts, and then there's a point where either the other team adjusts and the other team adjusted the other adjustment, or there's one adjustment that comes and then, like, they can't get past it. And when Saric went down, what that basically did was when the Bucks were able to go to Giannis at the five, small ball, switch all, the Suns quite honestly didn't have a counter because your counter to that is usually, let's spread you out with five out. Now, you can counter it by having Ayton slip more to the basket, but the Bucks defense was so good at what they do that they were able to disrupt that, and Ayton, I thought, got tired and really struggled. I don't necessarily know that Monty Williams got out-coached in that Bud had more answers available to him, but right. I do think that ultimately, I think really it goes back to game five. Their lack of game plan discipline in games four and five is what killed them. The fact that the Suns, like Monty talked about wanting to run more and they got slower, and he talked more about needing to generate threes, and they shot fewer threes every single game. So like, over the course of the series, they got further and further away from their game. And that's something to watch out for, I think, when you're analyzing a coach, is does your team maintain game plan discipline? And the Suns really did not. They got further and further away from it.
Do you think Saric and DiVincenzo were comparable losses?
I do. Okay. I think that's comparable. I think that the difference, though, is the Bucks had, like, in terms of player quality and what they were doing, a lot of it was, that's why the Bucks pretty much had to go to the idea of like, look, we're going to have to let one of them cook. And early in the series, it was like Chris Paul cook. And they were like, well, that didn't work. So then they were like, let's just let Devin Booker do whatever. And let's shut down Chris Paul. And that really turned the series. And then
Connington got roasted. And so that's why I say yes, is because the player that replaced him was very low impact.
And I thought in game six that it was a nice counter the other way, where the Suns had lost so much faith in their offense that then they started playing Holiday and putting more pressure on Booker, and the Suns didn't adjust back. And so that, as well as, like, that was also one of those games where, like, the momentum has just turned. Like, the series was decided in game five. The Suns were pretty clearly shook after that and, like, did not have, like, just, they were too young to be able to kind of recenter, refocus, and gut out a game six. Because, like, when you've got that kind of momentum, you've just went on the road to win game five, you've won three straight. Like, that, it's hard to turn that, especially when Giannis goes for 50.
Nuggets Clippers game seven is what you see game six as.
Yeah. Okay. And so, like, the Suns, look, I think you can use all those things that you said about the Suns, and you can just apply them to the Bucks and say, look, they went seven games, and it was close late with the Nets without Kyrie Irving and James Harden, right? So,
yeah.
Like, and you can do this on and on and on. Like, there's always these injuries that decide it. I did an article and went back and looked at all these things, and there's kind of all of those. I think the Suns were – part of it is, look, if the Suns had not been good this year, I would be more with you on this side.
Okay.
But the Suns were the best team in the league versus the best team in the league. They had the best record versus the best teams. They had the best point differential versus the best teams. They had so many options and so many weapons. And ultimately, they ran into a team that was better. And that's just, like, how the playoffs go. But I do think it's interesting, though. I think there's – like, Adam, I need your input on this. And thanks, Omar, for the questions, as always, man. You're the best. Adam, I need your kind of input. I'm sensing that, like, Suns – like, Nuggets fans have a little bit of distaste for the Suns now.
Like, well, it's because they are the Nuggets, like – that, you know, they're the team. They got to be the team their fans all thought they could be. So I think that's honestly part of it. Is there's like seven Cinderellas and only one gets to wear the slipper, and they got to wear it. So all the other Cinderellas are like, ah, whatever. But I think here's the thing that's funny, and it goes even back to the, like, Budenholzer, Monty Williams question. If Giannis doesn't make the most incredible block or one of the most incredible blocks of all time, did Monty Williams outcoach Budenholzer? You know, if Giannis goes 13 of 19 from the free throw line, which is still fantastic, you know, did Monty Williams outcoach Budenholzer? Like, this series and all these playoffs were on such were on the margins, as they almost always are. So, you know, Budenholzer did a lot of some good things. The number one thing he did was Drew Holiday was good enough to guard Chris Paul or Devin Booker, but usually Chris Paul. And that was, like, having that guy that was capable of doing that allows him to make adjustments that work. You kind of referenced this earlier when you said he had more at his disposal. And I do think that's part of it. But the biggest adjustment, and here's one of the things that I haven't heard people talk about. The biggest adjustment in terms of Milwaukee's, the two things in terms of Milwaukee's success this year. One has been talked about a lot, about putting the ball in Chris Middleton's hands over the last 3 minutes or so of the game and running actions that kind of look to him more than maybe looking to Giannis to play make. And, you know, that was well talked about throughout this entire playoff run, and it worked very well. But the other part of this was that Giannis, and I don't know if this was a Budenholzer thing or if this was a Giannis thing or both, but Giannis just agreed this season to become a pick-and-roll role man, to almost play like a more traditional center, even though he still did all of the other things. Like, he found the perfect balance. But he played that role man spot, and he did it so well. And even with regards to – I brought this up, I think, with George Karl the other day. The shot that sort of won the series in that game six, Chris Middleton hits a little, like, running. He catches the ball, hits a little running jumper from the elbow, extended elbow. And it goes from 6 to 8, and I think that was like, okay, the Bucks are going to win. But that play involved a pick and roll with Giannis rolling to the rim. Defense has to collapse because it's Giannis. He's a great rim roller. And because of that, you get a one-on-one situation with Chris Middleton at the elbow, jumping over Devin Booker, who he's taller than, and he knocks it down. And it's just like, to me, that's not an adjustment Budenholzer made in the series. It was an adjustment he and Giannis agreed upon this season that led to getting the most out of Giannis, getting the most out of Middleton, and it just really working. So sometimes these in-game adjustments can be overstated based on the larger, like, philosophical adjustment that defined their season.
We're also brought to you by Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get in the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts, Brian Scalabrine, and former general manager, Ryan McDonough. It's the perfect way to get ready for the NBA draft. Our Locked On NBA local experts make selections and trades for your favorite basketball teams throughout this week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y, Odyssey.
You mentioned the kind of results-oriented look at coaches. This is one of the funny things I ran into from various people. I've heard this commentary that, like, well, you know, Malone got outcoached by Terry Stotts in that 2019 series. That's not true. Like, that's just not true. Malone had a bunch of adjustments, I thought, in that series with a shorthanded roster because of all where Will and Gary were at, and they still got there. Like, Terry Stotts' quote-unquote adjustment in Game 7 was having to play Evan Turner and Myers Leonard because he didn't know what else to do. Like, he just threw shit out there. And then, like, I heard he got out-coached by Frank Vogel. That's not true. Like, the Nuggets did not have a counter on roster for what the Lakers do. Right. And I don't know that they still do. Like, sometimes your roster does not allow you to make adjustments. There's not always an adjustment to make. There are oftentimes one that you can do. And there's, like, stuff that you can do, but it's not, you know, it won't even change the outcome. So it's like, is it worth getting away from your game plan, et cetera? So, like, I think that there's those kind of questions.
You reminded me of something sneaky. One of the things Giannis said in his post, he said so many interesting things in his post game after the finals. But one of the things he said was that last year, like, we're a family oriented team. We all missed our family or this, like, he wasn't making excuses, but he was just kind of talking about last year, how, yeah, you know, he referenced that. And I'm telling you, man, the more you hear stories from the bubble and just to talk about it, the more you realize that that was such a different battle than every single other one. Not that it was any less. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Lakers, but there were so many other pressures going on with teams besides just who wins or X's and O's or coach adjustments.
Well, and look, I don't mean to turn it this way, but if you're gonna like look at it with the Lakers, like, you have to do the same thing with the Nuggets. That's kind of like the risk, I think, is like making the Western Conference Finals is such a feather in the cap. But if you take the approach that, look, the bubble is just a weird time for everybody, and you kind of have to remove it from the space time continuum, then, you know, the same thing has to be said for the Nuggets Western Conference Finals appearance, the first Western Conference Finals appearance in 11 years. So I tend to think that a lot of that's repeatable, especially with how they've adjusted the roster and how much better Jokic is. But I think it's a question. Nick asks, where do y'all think Malone fits in the Suns Nuggets comparison? More capable than Monty. Asher says Monty's better than Malone. Malone is still good, but Monty's a borderline elite coach. I will say I don't agree with that. So, like, here's kind of the thing with Monty Williams. Monty Williams is one of the best people in the NBA, and he is a great motivator, and the players love him, and they play hard for him. His teams are prepared. He has good principles. He runs a good staff. Like, there's all these things to really like about Monty Williams. But bear in mind, like, this is the first major playoff run Monty Williams has had. Like, had the time in New Orleans. They had that you know, the one series, and that's really beyond, like, versus the Warriors, and they really got kind of crushed, and then he was gone. And so, like, there's not a lot of stuff there to really suggest that Bonnie's, like, an elite coach. I think he's elite in terms of being beloved. And that's not a bad thing. Like, it's good to have players that are really committed to you. And I think Monty did a great job this year. But I wouldn't say necessarily that I would not put Monty leaps and bounds ahead of Malone. I think they're similar tiered. I probably have Malone a little higher because, as you guys know, I'm pretty high on Malone. Omar says Monty better X's and O's. I don't agree with that at all. There's nothing the Suns do that's like, oh man, it's so intricate. And like, well, look at how they design, like, they run pick and roll and they play good defense. Like, there's nothing that about the way the Suns play is more impressive than the type of style or how they put things together, in those kind of conversations.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm old enough to remember, as maybe 3 years ago, when people were talking about Monty Williams is not a good coach. So
yeah,
it's funny how much these things can just shift on a dime. Whenever you talk to people inside basketball and ask them about coaches, like they have their guys they like, they advocate, and it makes a difference. And I think it makes a difference, especially like when you talk about years, not just 1 year, but year to year, the impact coaches make. A lot of your analytics people or people inside basketball just say like, yeah, it matters a little bit. Maybe makes 2 or 3 game difference max, you know, swing between good and bad. And the longer I cover this, the more I kind of think that. Where I think you really separate yourself is more on the year by year by year. You get a coach that has everyone's voice and builds culture and all of those types of things. But the actual like X's and O's adjustments, I think, get overstated quite often.
I agree. I think there's exceptions to the rule. Like what Nick Nurse did with the Raptors defense stands out. I do think though that a lot of it is, I've heard this too, a bad coach is way more harmful than a good coach is helpful.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Like that's really kind of how the equation works out.
And once you lose a locker room, like then things like really they just start to compound, and that happens. Like coaches lose locker rooms.
Right. He is really good at player development. This is kind of mentioned, like getting Cam Payne to be the player that he was this year, having Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges, right? Like having honestly developing DeAndre Ayton to be at this level. Like Ayton has become such a pro, and like the voice that Monty's been for that team, I think, has really mattered. I just don't know that you can really like look at that and say like, well, Malone doesn't do any of that stuff. Like he's got a really good track record of getting the most out of guys. So I think it's I think there's a lot there. And yeah, I will always say that I think it's really hard to understand coaching because you have to be in the room, I think, to understand the good, the bad, and the ugly. Asher has a question and or comment. Asher, what you got, buddy?
So with Will declining his player option, there's some uncertainty about the Nuggets guard rotation heading into next year. Even with Will, there was some uncertainty. So let's say he leaves, right? One, do the Nuggets try to bring back Austin Rivers, possibly? Because he can fill a not similar role on offense, but he can do a lot of the shot creating and possibly a two-man game thing with Jokic. You know, not sure on that one, but he's probably the best in-house after Will at doing that. And two, if you guys have looked at Josh Christopher, I think Adam has on DNVR, and I think Matt maybe has, I'm not sure. But Josh Christopher is just a scorer, basically, that I really think could bring some value at 26 and play right off the bat, because he's not, like, a bad defender at all. So I think that if he were to be drafted, I think he could fill in somewhat in that like bench scoring role. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
So have you scouted him yet, Matt?
Yeah, last night I spent about 30 minutes going over clips and stats on him. I haven't done a deep dive yet, but I have enough to talk about him.
So to me, he's one of those guys that has a pretty decent upside. You know, he looks like a guy that you could really build a foundation off of, and he's athletic. So you think that maybe that'll translate to defense more than it did in his freshman season. I'm not a huge fan of that mold of player, but admittedly, he is a guy that I think could turn into the type of player I like. He just wasn't that as a freshman. So he's an interesting one. I don't like what he did, but I do like what I think he can be.
Don't love the size. I'm with you on not preferring those types of players. Like, look, if you want like a go-to, if you like a ready-made scorer, go get a veteran. Like, just go get a veteran that knows how to play the game and is more experienced and these type of things. Like, I don't know that in the draft, like, you want a ready-to-contribute guy, especially for this team. Like, especially I don't think you want a guy that score first, score second kind of guy is how I've heard him described. And to me, that's like, I think it gets dangerous when he's got to fit into a very specific role. Like, we've seen young guys struggle on this team, various dudes, because they'll get looks from the veterans who are like, what are you doing? That's not how this works. No, do part of the offense, move the ball. So I think that's kind of like part of the equation as well.
So often when we talk about players like this, we talk about selfishness as like a conscious decision. And I don't know that it necessarily is. I think that almost simplifies it a lot. A lot of this is just knowing what you're supposed to do. Shooting is easy because you just shoot. Like, you know, you've been doing that your whole life. Even if you know how to take contested shots, you know how to get open shots or whatever, but actually getting open within a system or playing, that's a thing that has to be learned as much as it has to be accepted. And for young player like him, it probably has to be both. It both accepted and learned. But even if he had, like a lot of people say, yeah, but once he plays with better players, he'll do it. Yeah, then he has to learn how to do that, how to be a Gary Harris where you're not going to touch the ball except for maybe once every third time down the court. It's difficult.
Let's see. Nick mentions that the post is pitching Zaire Williams out of Stanford. I like Zaire a lot. 6'9". Love the size. He's got great form on his jumper. The shot percentage wasn't there, but I feel like if you give him enough reps, that's going to work out. Like, I prefer Springer. I've made that known. That's who I took on our Locked On mock drafts. That's like Springer's my guy. Adam said I could pick whoever. And so that's who I took was Springer. In part though, I will say I took him with you in mind because I was like, okay, extremely high basketball IQ, can do a lot. I was like, I don't think that Adam's going to be like, what are you doing? So that was part of my, don't get me wrong. I thought about just picking guys that you would be like, what are you doing? I considered that just for the content, but no, I think that guy, there's a question about, Eric mentions the two guys he likes are McBride and Springer. McBride, I hear, he may be a guy that leaps. Omar asked earlier about who's going to trade. The Knicks are actively trying to trade up. They have two picks, and they're trying to coalesce those into a higher pick. The Rockets want another top 20 pick, and I hear that they have not goal line, but like 50-yard line discussions with a team in the teens that's likely to move up. That's what I've heard. I've also heard that the Pistons are likely to move out of their second rounders, and I've heard that the Bulls are willing to shop their first rounder as well because they want, like, Arturis is definitely trying to build, like, a win-now mentality. He's trying to get, like, a roster that they can build with Levine. So there's a bunch of guys that are open to it. Are the Nuggets going to possibly trade their pick? Look, I haven't checked in on that question specifically. I've gotten like general insights, but I think I'd be a little bit surprised. The sense I get is that they believe that they need, because of the money situation, they're going to need cheap talent. Like, I just think that that's going to be a part of the equation. And maybe you've heard differently, Adam, and you can, because these things are never, it's not like you ask them and then they're like, let us tell you what we're going to do. That's not how it works. But you kind of have to infer these things. But the sense I've gotten is that there has been kind of an idea of like, okay, we've traded picks to build the team, right? But at some point we have to stop with the picks that we have. We have to stock replacement talent because we're going to be cap limited and tax limited by the roster that we have.
Yeah, I would not at all be surprised if they traded the pick. I wouldn't be surprised if they took it either. I mean, obviously, Tim Connelly, I think, loves the draft. He's very good at it, and I think it's the comfort spot for him. So the default would be just to use it. But, you know, they do have an immediate need for talent, especially with Jamal Murray out, with Will Barton uncertain, Jermichael Green uncertain. You just need guys that can play, and no matter who they take, look, there might be guys that end up being playable right away. I mean, there's always rookies. Even rookies taken in the back half of the first round who are impact players on playoff teams, albeit on a small role. But I have a feeling Denver actually needs like ready to go surefire thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if they traded it, even if I think it's less likely than 50%. I also wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if Denver traded down.
Let me look at the board and see if there's anybody that I can see wanting to move up to 26. Utah is trying to move out. Philly, maybe. Unlikely. OKC, we'll always move up. We'll always add another pick. That's always a thing they'll do.
Yeah. Well, one thing to think about, too, is not that I think there's like a major schism between the front office and the coaching staff, but I mean, it is pretty clear that the front office has given him Michael Malone young players, and Michael Malone has not used them. And then last year, trading assets to get JaVale McGee, who ended up just not playing. And I know, like, look, maybe he would have played in a Lakers series or whatever, but I still think I expected him to play more than he did during the regular season. So that just, I only bring that up to say that part of Tim Connelly's job is not just putting the best team that he thinks is available, but putting the best team that he thinks Michael Malone will trust. And you could give him the most ready-made rookie. I still would not have confidence that Michael Malone is going to play that rookie in the regular season to prepare him for the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think Zeke's the perfect proof of this. Like, Zeke was great last year.
He's a mature rookie.
Yeah, he's a mature rookie, and he played well, and he got rotation minutes. And then by the end of the season, it was like, oh, well, that's over.
It's just, right.
You know, and look, I don't think it's entirely Malone. I think some of that has to do with the team has to trust him too. I think that some of it is that they know how tough mistakes are for playoff series. I think the players less so because coaches are always more tuned into mistakes, but I think that's at least part of the equation. Who right now, are you still in on Quentin Grimes? That's still like your guy?
Yeah, Springer and Grimes both are kind of similar in a lot of ways. I like Grimes a little bit better, but yeah, that mold. I mean, it's kind of funny. People are, now that I've been covering this long enough, people kind of know the type of players I like and don't like. And Josh Christopher, as we talked about earlier, not my mold of player. Quentin Grimes, much more in line with the type of player I like.
What do you like about Springer? Let's talk about him for a second.
I think he's probably the best defender of all the guys we talked about. He looks to me like an actual impact defender, of which there's very few in the NBA. That's why this is my theory. But he looks like he could be one of them. And then some of the other stuff on offense it's a little concerning. But you know, I think I think his defensive impact and some of his physical strength and assets will be useful.
It's an interesting question, right? Like, do you draft rookies for their defense? Is an interesting question because, like, no rookies really all that great at defense. It takes a couple of years. Like, Matisse Thybulle is an exception. There have been a few other exceptions, but for the most part, like, they just don't know what they're doing yet, right?
But he's the type that does. Because you're right about this. If it's just like a physical tools defender or whatever, but he is a pretty smart player, so I think he'd be more of a Marcus Smart who could walk in and be impactful because he's. And he's going to both be good at guarding the ball, but also be good at not making mistakes, which is what I think you're alluding to.
I also feel like with his shooting form, what I've noticed from watching him is I just feel like it's slow. I just feel like NBA repetition day after day after day after day after day. He's just going to get better at it. Like I just feel like he's going to get better at it. What's funny in this draft is there's so many guys that are this is a slighter than usual draft. Like, there's always kids where you're like, guys, so skinny. And this is, like, an exception. Like, they're even skinnier this year.
I love it.
Like, Jalen Green, it just feels me. Every time I watch Jalen Green, I'm like, God, he's just, like, skin and bones. You also have to think, like, okay, but 3 years in an NBA program, what does he look like? Giddey's like this, too. Josh Giddey. Yeah. I do have a fun question for you that I wanted to ask you.
Okay, then I've got one for you to close out.
We have to get out of here at 12:45. Have you guys, have you looked at the top of the draft at all? Because I know the Nuggets aren't going to draft there. Okay. Is there any guy in the top five that you would trade MPJ for?
I mean, yeah. I think you would trade for Cade Cunningham. That fits the mold of, like, what player Denver you could really build around. I don't know about any of the other one. I mean, like, I really like Mobley, and Mobley, maybe he works with Jokic in a perfect way as a power forward. So
probably not. Yeah.
Too many questions.
Like, I love Jalen Suggs, but even Jalen Suggs, I'm like, I don't know about the fit. Like, Jalen Suggs is like my guy. I'm super high on Jalen Suggs. Yeah. I'm a huge Jalen Suggs guy.
I think all top prospects, like all of those guys, including Mobley, all have the, like, yeah, they're probably going to be good. Probably. We don't know, but they're probably going to be good. I think Cade Cunningham is one, and maybe every other year has a top pick that's like this, where you're like, I'd be pretty shocked if he wasn't at least good, like at least a very good point guard. I'm trying to think if you go back, like Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, those guys, you know, Ben Simmons, I think you were pretty confident he was going to be good, but you knew he had flaws. Brandon Ingram, you were like, I'm pretty sure, but we don't know. And even to this day, I'm not sure Brandon Ingram's, like, great.
Yeah.
So most Andrew Wiggins, you know, like, you have a guy like that where you're like, I think he's going to be good, but I'm not certain. But Cade Cunningham represents the latter for me, where I'm like, yeah, I'd be pretty shocked if he wasn't really good.
What's your question for me? Because we got Haley wants to ask a question, and I want to get to Carlos's comment.
So it's just reported right now that Minnesota Vikings head coach Rick Dennison is out after refusing to receive a COVID vaccine. So decided not to do this, and I don't know if you saw yesterday that the NFL is now saying if you have unvaccinated players that get COVID, and then it causes your team to get COVID and us to, you know, to have to cancel a game or whatever, they put some strict fines. And one, your team's just going to lose and forfeit that game. And two, they will not make it up and you'll be fined your game checks. So the NFL is basically trying to say, like, not having the vaccine is no longer an excuse. Do you think that this is going to come to the NBA?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Players union is too powerful. So the NBA.
But again, we're talking about money. Are we going to do the thing? Is the Players Association going to agree to, hey, we're doing makeup games, so you might have a triple header?
I think it's more likely that they do that than the other. They're more willing to sacrifice that than player control over bodies, which is a very big issue for the NBPA. I think the NFL has such a power structure based around the money, and like their power structure is all top down. The NBA is not, especially not right now. And so I don't think that that will wind up happening. I think it would take something like the TV companies won't guarantee our contracts unless we do this, which I don't see the TV structures having the power, a legal authority or will to do.
Yeah.
So for me, like, look at the current part of it also is like the NBA is very, very, very sensitive to the environment around their game. And they're in the environment around their game right now, as reflected on social media is Yas King. That's like the whole thing is like, we stand for a legend. Like, that's the whole thing. It's all about like the players and what they want and what they think is awesome. And like all these things. And you can think that's right, wrong, or the other. That's just like how it is. And if that's the play, then I don't see any scenario where this becomes a thing. I think that and because there's so many more games, so they're like, that's part of the thing with the NFL, right? You lose an NFL game, it's devastating. It's 1 of 16. You lose an NBA game, you can reschedule it for 6 months down the line, find a spot. If they have like long-term stoppages, we saw this last year. I think it's still very, I would be surprised.
Look, man, the Nuggets, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Nuggets lost all of their players, or like the injury thing hit during the stretch of games where they had to make up the Detroit game. And I'm not trying to blame it. I think it was a culmination of just the season in general, but it just so happened to be in that stretch where they had back like 7 games in 10 days or something. Yep. And but the NBA has already done this, by the way, a little bit in the, if you have the vaccine, you know, you 4 days in the protocols. If you don't, it's like 10 or whatever. Yep. So they already have a little bit of an incentive in there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to make it just a little bit more.
Carlos asked, would it surprise you if Gary doesn't start the year well in Orlando rebuilding if he's bought out? Would you be your thoughts be if he would rejoin Denver? Can't do that. You're not allowed to trade a player, have him get bought out and then re-sign with you, I think, for a calendar year, which I guess...
So it could happen at the end of the year.
But I'd be pretty surprised. There's not a lot of incentive for Orlando to do that. He's too young. So.
Also, I've heard that part of Gary Harris's desire to leave, or the, you know, for him to be traded or whatever, why he was fine with it, was sort of to restart his career. So I think he knew what he was going to be in Denver and wanted to try his hand at being something more.
Haley has a question. Haley, what you got?
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Haley.
So I'll try to make this quick. So Airbnb, I don't know if you guys have seen, are doing all of these Olympics experiences where you can sign up to actually get to be on a Zoom call and meet Olympians. And I was freaking lucky enough to get 2 tickets to talk to Larry Bird with 10 people.
That's awesome.
So I'm just so like cool. Losing my mind. And I became a basketball fan 3 years ago.
Jokic.
Oh yeah, I know. But I feel like that can't be the first question, you know?
Like, sure it can. I've been dying to hear Larry Bird talk about yoga. I've been dying.
I know. Well, okay. So what the fuck questions do I ask? Like, I don't know basketball history. I'm trying to watch, you know, I'm watching Larry Bird highlights just because, like, I like the style of that game and, like, you know. But what questions do I ask him? I was going to ask, like, do you watch Jokic? And, like, what do you think about, you know, like,
I don't know.
Like, kind of an open-ended question about that. But I would love some ideas from you guys on how to ask that and what else to ask, because
how do you feel about his game or how he plays? That would be like the open-ended way to ask that one. And then I would say the follow-up that I'm so curious is, say, can you compare and contrast sort of his game to yours? Do you see a lot of similarities?
Sweet.
I would say, okay. I would ask him stuff like about his time with the Pacers is like, what was the hardest thing about trying to build a team versus being on one? I think that's like a pretty interesting question. And then pick a player, any player from that era that doesn't get talked about enough, and just ask him what it was like to play against him. Moses Malone, Hakeem Olajuwon before the 94 Rockets run, like just any of those guys, because I think all that's like really interesting. So
Larry Bird's also the other interesting thing about him, and you could just think about how to ask this one, but he is one of very few, maybe the only person on earth who is both a great basketball player, a great coach, and a great general manager.
Yeah.
So, some question about the skill set it takes to do that, or what one doesn't realize about the other, or anything like that. He also has the great quote I always think about, where he said, "No head coach in the NBA has their team's ear for more than 3 years." I would look up that quote, and maybe there's something around that to just kind of ask him about.
It's funny because like it's awesome that you get to do this, Haley. That's like that's so exciting. It also just shows how much of like media nerds that Adam and I are, because we're definitely like, what makes the best story? Like, what can I write a column around? Versus most people be like, what was it like? The dream team. What was that like?
Would
be like,
well, so I think they're gonna focus on that because it's like Olympics themed. I think they're gonna focus on like talking about that. So do you guys have a question about that I could ask him? Because again, I've never watched those. Like, I'm gonna go back and watch highlights, but yeah.
I would say, the only question along those lines that I would ask him is something to do with is European basketball or foreign basketball learning more from American basketball right now, or American basketball learning more from foreign? Or
that's a good one.
Something of that nature. About the influence. Who's having more influence? Who should have more influence right now?
Omar also mentioned that he's the GOAT trash talker, which is true. So definitely.
Oh, yeah. Try to prod him on that.
Yeah, definitely ask him. Okay,
who's your least favorite player?
Yeah, like who is the player that talked trash most to you? That would be an awesome one. So thanks, Haley. That's awesome that you get to do that.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. We got to get out of here today. But we'll be back next week with more episodes. I did not get to download this one before the Will Barton news last week, but I'm doing it right now, and I'll have the episode up here in like an hour or so. You can listen to it again if that's your kind of thing. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Check out all of Adam's stuff over at thednvr.com. We'll have reaction on Monday from Jermichael Green's big decision on his player option, as well as more continuing news and rumors about the NBA draft and free agency. We'll touch on all that, plus, of course, who are the Lakers going to get? It's going to make Adam so mad. We'll do all that next week. Thanks for joining us, guys, on the Locked On Nuggets live show.